Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
And we're live. Welcome again, everybody, to another Knife Talk episode. We're here to keep you company in the shop, answer your questions, talk life, talk knives, all that kind of stuff. And as always, I'm here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Craig Lockwood is back with us this week. All three of us are here. Lockwood of Chop Knives, as well as the 355s. How are things going, actually, with the 355s, Craig?
All good. That's one of the reasons I'm in the UK at the moment. We've got a gig tomorrow in London, so all right. Yeah, all good. All good.
Are you excited?
Very, but I'm just very tired. We're currently on I'll start with this week. Currently in like a kid's holiday village, like a country park village thing. And one of those kind of places where the adults just let their kids run fucking riot everywhere, you know? the kids have now gone up to bed. I'm down in the tiniest little makeshift studio that I could find. But yeah, excited tomorrow. We're in London for a gig tomorrow, so I'm excited about that. Yeah, all good.
This is the first time we've all been together in a few weeks.
It is. I'd say the last 2 months has been pretty hectic.
Yeah.
Between myself and Mareko. Yeah. Jeff, steady as a rock as ever. But I'm back next week, back in France for the foreseeable. So yeah, all good.
That Bob Seger, like Ford commercial song, just came into my head.
I think like a rock.
Yeah, like a rock.
Like a rock.
All right.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, congratulations, YouTube, because I think last week's episode is apparently the best ever. So congratulations.
Based on what?
I don't know.
You're just making it up.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody reposted on Knife Talk, somebody saying that it was the best in a long time, at least, anyway.
Oh. Well, it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if we did whatever. Sometimes you got to do whatever it takes to, you know, whatever. So without the three of us, it's not as good. But the last two episodes have been funny and good. There's a lot of response to Craig's departure midway through two episodes ago.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
and then there's some bounce around because there was. There's listener feedback in regards to that. But if without you, three of us, to me, it's just like we're just treading water.
Okay. There's some blowback about that, shall we say.
There's a lot poop knife talk and all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
Don't worry. Okay.
Mareko, okay, so how was your week?
The week's all right. Actually, I might have sabotaged myself this week, this build that I'm working on. I'm just like, it's for somebody who's a friend but is kind of like a celebrity type, and I'm trying to make sure it's great, but I'm also trying to get it done ASAP, and I might have fucked it up. so I'm gonna see probably tomorrow I'm going to see if it's salvageable, but if not, it's out the window because it's not going to work for this build. And
fucked up in what way? What's happened?
Oh, I was hollow grinding, and it's a Bob Loveless style knife, and what was that? It was doing like an 8-inch hollow on my broadback, actually, and it was all going great, but I don't hollow grind very often. But like I said, things were going super smooth, and I was just about done when I realized that I had ground the bevel to like fucking zero, like nothing. And because it's a hollow grind, it was like 200 thousandths of an inch, like an eighth or 3/16 of an inch into the blade edge. And so I was like, fuck. And I ended up, I just like kind of poked a little bit with my fingernail and the steel started to tear. It was so thin and flimsy. It was basically like a foil. Yeah. So I kind of popped out a little chip, just to kind of get an idea. Usually when things are too thin, I'm like, all right, well, let's damage it and then push it back to the bottom of that damage. So I'm going to try taking off just a little bit over an eighth of an inch and seeing if that's going to work. And if it doesn't, then I got to do something else for this guy. And I got to finish this knife out, though, and sell it. But it's just a bummer because I feel like everything I've done for this, he has other work of mine. And every time there's like a little bit of a flaw or something that like it just goes slightly sideways or wrong with it. And a couple of builds I had to like scratch. And one, I think when I heat treated the Integral Chef's knife, it had 1095 in the mix. And so it didn't fold properly, like harden back by the bolster, which honestly wasn't really much of an issue because that doesn't affect the performance of the knife. But when it comes to etching the blade, I was doing ferric still on that one. For whatever reason, I was having a hard time with the coffee at the time. So I went ferric, and it's very like obvious when you do ferric with kind of essentially differentially hardened steels. And even in Damascus, you can see kind of like this hormone effect. And he was like, what's up with that? And I'm like, oh, just like trying to explain it. And I'm just like, fuck, I wish I could get the coffee. Cause the coffee, like, again, it doesn't take away from the thing. Right. But aesthetically it doesn't look right. It looks unintentional versus an intentional process thing that you've done. And so the coffee helps to kind of not necessarily mask or hide it. It's just like it etches everything really nice and dark, whether it's soft or if it's hard. And so you have less of that visual difference, almost none of it. And so anyways, just struggling with building shit for this guy, and it sucks. And part of me is like, fuck, maybe I should stop trying to build things for this guy. I do have some notes on for myself for the next time around. If I do have to rebuild it or do a knife like this in the future, which I think I will, just about how, like the kind of the order of operations of the hollow grind. I think that's what my problem was, is I just kind of dove into it with very little to no experience. And so I didn't really have the proper, order of operations lined up, and that's where I ended up. It ended up biting me in the ass when I was basically almost done.
Yeah, but the good thing is you're learning from it, and it won't happen again.
Right, that's the key.
That's the key. It's not all high fives and lightning bolts and high fives, here, Mareko. Yeah, remember,
it's not. It sure ain't.
That's a callback from a long time ago.
You know what? I hate to say this, but I interrupted you, Craig, about your week.
Oh, no, I'm done. That's my week.
All right, never mind. Yeah, take it back.
Nothing exciting going on here, believe me. Believe me.
So everything else, Mareko, has been good, or?
Yeah, no, everything else is going good. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be down in Arizona at the Travis Wirtz Hammer Inn doing some demonstrations down there. I'll be doing some blade forging as well as some blade grinding or handle sculpting. It's still kind of up in the air right now. And then right after that, if anybody who's down in the Southwest, so like Arizona, New Mexico, California, all that, you know, Utah, whatever's down there. I'm going to be teaching at the Desert Metalcraft School. It's owned and operated by Rich Greenwood, great guy, former Forge and Fire competitor, and not the, I don't know, anyways, so Anyways, I'm going to be down there teaching fundamentals of material movement, so to help people really understand what different forging operations not only are doing to the steel and what it looks like on the outside, like you see if you're just forging monosteel, but what's happening to the lines and the activity of the pattern on the inside of the material, how to anticipate that, how to and plan for that so that you can then better plan your own Damascus patterns, as well as reverse engineer other people's approaches to kind of adapt it to your own style. And it's a 2-day class. It's going to be a lot of fun, and there's going to be a lot of information shared in there, and I think people are going to really dig it. I really like it a lot.
Are you going to be at Blade Show?
I will be at Blade Show. Are you going to be at Blade Show?
I'm fucking toying with it.
Oh,
I might. If I do it though, I'm gonna go down in the morning and leave at night.
Wow. Okay.
I'm thinking about it. I'm not really thinking about going down. I did this once before down to Florida when my uncle died. I took a flight at 6 o'clock in the morning, went to the funeral, and went right back. I'm tempted to fucking go. I may go to Blade Show, but I'm not gonna talk about it anymore because I just don't know.
I gotcha.
When is it?
Is it June?
Yeah, it's June. It's the first full like Friday, Saturday, Sunday in June.
I don't know, man. That's the problem. I'm gonna be close to Barcelona. I don't know if I can do it.
Right. Yeah, it's probably gonna be June 7th, 8th, and 9th.
I wouldn't want to get the measles from some of you motherfuckers.
Yeah, some gross fucking people.
The measles are coming back, baby.
Fucking get ready. Mouth breathers.
All right. With that said,
how's your week been?
Speaking of Barcelona, this week I got a call from last week I got a call from Tomer Botner from Florentine Kitchen Knives. He said, "Listen, I got a customer of mine near your neck of the woods, and I was wondering, he needs a couple knives fixed of mine. Do you think you could fix them for me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, listen, you're my friend. No matter, no problem, whatever." So it turned out the guy sent me 12 knives.
Holy shit.
You know, like 8 of them, and the handles all need to be redone. The handles need to be fixed. This motherfucker, I mean, he ain't listening to this, and I don't think Tomer's listening to him. Tomer probably, he listens in and out. The guy put it in the dishwasher. It's like, I did it because, you know, like I paid me, obviously, but I mean, I did it for Tomer too. Cause you know, look, you can't send, you know, 12 knives to Spain and back and think that the duty, the taxes and the duty and everything are going to be okay. But at the end of it, Tomer's like, "You're now Florentine Kitchen Knives US." And I'm like, you're right.
US branch.
Because yeah. I've made a pile of them. I remember the first time I went to visit him, I was waiting for the airport and I hand sanded a pile of knives for him. And I've done about 6 or 7 stacked handles, his style, the way he does it. I'm just like, holy shit, I could work for Tomer 100%. You could plug me right in. 100%.
Nice.
So we just put those in the mail and we're working on a couple things. But honestly, I want to get into the fact that our listeners are fantastic, and our listeners have sent us a lot of wonderful feedback in the last couple episodes in regards to, we've done this kind of like, you know, we've been doing this, what, 6 years now, 5 or 6 years now? I mean, you got to talk about something different. We've been talking a little bit about self-sabotage the last two episodes, and it really resonated with our listeners. So we have a ton of listeners, red flags, and self-sabotage, stories of self-sabotage. And we should just, you know, want to thank you both for being as, you know, forthright as you are.
Well, let's continue with those self-sabotages. But first off, let's tell everybody about the greatest heat ovens in the world, from Evenheat, evenheat-kiln.com. They're what we use. Everybody we know uses an Evenheat because they're the best. So if you're looking for an oven, head over to evenheat-kiln.com. Okay, what we got then, Jeff? Who's self-sabotaging?
The last two episodes, we were talking about self-sabotage, and, you know, in order to be, you know, we talk about knife making, we talk about business, but there's this kind of like in-between part where, yes, you know how to make a knife and you know how to sell a knife, but it's like, what is it in ourselves that is maybe stopping us or sabotaging us, or it's always unconscious, but at the same time, blah, blah, blah. So if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, that's where you, oh, but please, if you want to send us any messages about this podcast, send it to Knife Talk, please. I'm begging you, because it's like, it's a whole production. So the first one is from Sam Goff. Sam Goff says, I just self-sabotaged myself by drinking 300 milliliters of caffeine at 9 o'clock at night. That's actually pretty funny. So, do you drink coffee at night, guys?
No.
No.
What's your cutoff?
2 p.m., anything after won't be good for me.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't necessarily say because it's a lack of sleep. It's just it won't go well with my – I generally have one in the morning. If I have one late, it's not going to work well with my stomach. And as you all know from my last appearance on this show, it doesn't take much to get me
going. The squits.
I cannot drink coffee past 9 in the morning. Otherwise, Whoa. It's like, oh, yeah, dude, Whoa. I'm now, I'm like streamlined. I'll be wild. Actually, I was almost going to drink coffee. I went to a Knicks game this past, in Madison Square Garden, and the shitty part was I had to stay up late because I had to make a train to come home. But the horrible part was, is we got in the game. I'm sitting with my high school friend and his daughter, who, while we were watching the game, found out that she got accepted to a college. And we're looking at the practice, and none of the starters are playing. So it was all the scrubs. So I had to take a train to the city. I had to stay up late. We had paid a lot of money for the tickets, and none of the starters played, and they got blown out. So, and then I was thinking, maybe I should have some coffee. I'm like, don't have any coffee. Mm-hmm. Huge mistake. Yeah. Next one comes from our friend. Go ahead.
My cutoff is 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Afternoon. Yeah, it's just if I drink it any later, I'll be fucking wired and wide awake. And what's weird is it doesn't hit me right away. It's just when I'm like, I realize I'm wired when I'm trying to go to sleep.
Oh.
But if it's a late, like once a week I go out and play pool, and I kind of semi torture myself and I stay out until like 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And after, you know, by 11 o'clock or midnight, I'm dragging ass a little bit and tired. And I'll do just like a little tumbler glass of Coke to kind of give me a little bit of a boost, but caffeine would be too much.
To be clear, Coca-Cola.
No, cocaine.
To be clear, okay.
Yeah, half a cup of cocaine.
The booger sugar.
A full tumbler glass, jeez.
Half a cup of cocaine, baby.
Hogging that shit.
Have mercy, baby. We're going to drink some cocaine and play some pool. Laramie Jackson says, how do you deal with imposter syndrome as a person or as a knife maker? So he's asking, how do you overcome imposter syndrome? And I was thinking about it just to get you guys prepared. I wonder if all professions have imposter syndrome. Part of me feels as though certain professions or careers most likely don't have imposter syndrome. I think that most artists don't, most like working sculptors, working painters, working artists, most of them don't have imposter syndrome because you're expressing yourself. And if it's successful and you're expressing yourself, then how can you be an imposter? I would imagine in the knife game, there's far more examples of imposter syndrome because knife making is so many just tips to kind of create something that you know. And maybe one of those tips or one of those parts makes you, you know, or you're not as good as other people. And I can understand why there's more imposter syndrome in knife making because it's almost like there's a consistency in terms of the product.
I'd say because a knife is functional. Let's say it's still art. Let's put it in the pot with art.
Right.
Most art isn't functional and it's based on opinions.
Right.
Subjective. It's subjective, exactly. Whereas a knife is functional, so there is obvious flaws if it's not quite right, and it can easily be measured against other people's work, I think.
Yeah.
So therefore, yeah, I could see how imposter syndrome, rather. But personally, I think with age, I'd say maybe the last 10, 15 years, personally for me, I just think, fuck it. I used to get it a lot with whatever I was doing. Always thinking, oh, geez, should I be doing this or is this good enough? But I think with age, I think that changes and you think, fuck it, I'm doing this almost for me anyway, rather than anybody else. So you don't, that doesn't really come come into my mind, you know?
Experience is underrated.
Hmm.
Hmm. You know? Yeah. What do you think, Recco? How do you overcome imposter syndrome?
I'm trying to think for myself and my kind of my journey, I guess. I think at a for a little while, I mean, obviously I'm doing all the work and I'm doing good work, but I feel like I hadn't really hit my stride yet or come into my own style yet. And up to that point, I didn't really feel, I don't know if I necessarily felt like an imposter, but I felt like I wasn't doing my own thing. And I think I can see how potentially somebody might feel like an imposter if they haven't really kind of struck out and come up with their own style. But I think it also, at least for me, comes from a place of, I guess maybe not feeling worthy of like good shit to happen to me in my life just because of my past and history and shit like that. And kind of the models that were set forth that I had when I was growing up as a kid. And so I think it really comes down to, and I read this really great book called, I think it's just called Self-Compassion, by Kristen Neff. And it's about kind of taking it easy on yourself, right? Like I think the people that I know who are the hardest on themselves are often creative people. And we have a tendency to be our own worst critic often. I mean, there's an old adage. I mean, it's there for a reason, exists for a reason. And I think some of that imposter syndrome comes from us maybe telling ourselves that we're not good enough or being hard on ourselves for making mistakes. When the fucking reality, like making mistakes is part of it. But mistakes, I think, and I said this last episode, are lessons in disguise. And if you don't learn the lesson, then they stay mistakes and you're likely to make that fucking mistake again. But if you try to learn from it, like I'm trying to learn from my mistake this past week, then it becomes a lesson and I get to add that to like my tool belt of skills and shit like that and knowledge and understanding going forward. And yeah, I think the biggest thing is just like taking it easy on yourself. Because realistically, like other people's opinions, I think like either Craig was saying is like, shouldn't actually matter too much unless they're the people who are the closest to you whose opinions really truly mean a lot to you. Then outside of that, like fuck everybody else because it's just noise. And so you got to take care of yourself and be good to yourself. And especially when you're not doing anything that's hurting anybody. Like if you're doing shit and you're being negative and terrible to other people or physically or emotionally or mentally or whatever, that's fucked up. Sure. But most of us are just in a creative, expressing ourselves creatively through this work or various other styles of work. And what's important is that we're finding that value and being willing and having kind of like the bravery kind of in a way to share that out in the world with everybody else. But yeah, I think a big part of it is just taking it easy on yourself.
What you just said was very interesting because that's the one major thing that working artists, contemporary artists have to deal with, which is the vulnerability of putting something out in the world that is to be judged. It is to be judged. I mean, art is to be judged. You go into a gallery, and when I say judged, I mean like when you go into a gallery, this resonates or doesn't resonate. Mm-hmm. This makes you think of something, or this makes you think of something good, makes you think something bad, but there is a degree of you're judging it based off of not it's good or bad, but it's making you feel something. So when you are an artist or you're expressing yourself, you're up for being vulnerable to the slings and arrows of the viewer. And that's part of it. I totally agree with you in regards to being gentle on yourself. I also believe it's good to it's good to kind of deal with these hardships and say, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it is the biggest thing, is the biggest takeaway. It's just like, okay, I acknowledge this. Now what? So are we going to just, you know, keep you know, freaking out? Or are we going to like say, all right, I'm going to listen to what Mareko said and I'm going to do this, this, and this and fuck them. We're going to keep going. That's the hardest part. It's addressing these issues, labeling them, and then figuring out what the fuck you're going to do about it.
Sure.
Mm.
Yep.
And I'd say whether that's knives or art or any sort of any creative output, I think, really, you know, if you put anything out there, it's as you say, it's there to be judged.
But you, Craig, are the most vulnerable at this point because you're making music that's being listened to by not only your brethren and fellow countrymen, but fucking Liam Gallagher's saying stuff about it. So how do you feel in the music game? Do you feel a degree of imposter syndrome, or do you have, I mean, how do you feel when you, when you're getting ready to have Liam Gallagher listen to your music for the first time?
Yeah, I think if this was me when I was 25, I don't think I could do it, to be honest with you. I think I'd be too nervous about what people thought about me, what people thought about the music. But now, I mean, I'm realistic. I'm mid to late 40s with a belly, grey hair, you know? So I know that we're not going to sort of take over the world and we're, you know, we're going to be a huge rock band. So I'm just happy for what we have. But yeah, only because I'm at a certain point in my life, I think. If this was 25 years ago, 20 years ago, things would be very different, and I can imagine like a lot of people would feel almost crippled by the visibility. I think particularly with music, because you put it out there, and particularly now, it's everybody's fingertips. Everybody can just press skip and move on to the next as if it never happened. Yeah, I think with age comes some sort of wisdom and an attitude of, I don't really care. I'm just doing what I enjoy doing now. So yeah, even now with gigs, I don't really get nervous. I'm just hopeful that I'm going to enjoy it, you know?
It's funny that you say when you were younger, you would have felt differently, because I thought about it. And I think from 18 to 25, I was the most arrogant. So I would have totally been like, if I was in the, 18 to 25, I was the most arrogant. 30 to 40, I was the most pussy. And then 42 to now, I'm as arrogant as I was when I'm 20, but far more like mature about it. So like from 30 to 40, imposter syndrome all day, because I had seen so much failure. Like the 30 to 40, it was like nothing was working right. And I was getting I had to be in metal shops and the art world was not working. And I was rejected from gallerists and shit was not fucking flying. And anytime I tried to like dip my toe back in, I felt like, ugh, what's the fucking point? Now it's just like, you know, 40 to 50, it's just like, I know what the fuck I'm doing. But I do get imposter syndrome on certain things. But then at the same time, it's just like, fuck it. How much more time do I have left on this planet? You know, if you want another 20 years, 30 years? Come on, man.
I think a lot of it is to do with maybe having kids as well.
Yeah, of course.
Where other people's opinion doesn't really matter, because all that really matters is that your family are happy and safe. You know, that's the only thing that I worry about.
When you two guys have your kids out the door, the arrogance is going to go through the roof. I'm telling you, that was like, Hillary and I are like doing victory laps.
Jeez, I'll be 60, believe me.
That's when you're going to be that. I'm telling you, a kid went to college and we're like doing high fives. We're like putting medals on each other and we're like standing, imagine like the fucking Olympics blocks in our own house, two Olympics blocks, and we're standing up there playing the fucking Olympics music, putting fucking laurel wreaths on our heads. It's ridiculous.
Talking about the Olympics, the gold medal of abrasives must go to Combat Abrasives at combatabrasives.com. They make the abrasives that we all use. Whatever you're after, they're going to have it. Go take a look, combatabrasives.com. If you use Knife Talk 15, you get 15% off your order, which can be a hell of a saving. So go take a look. Try something new. Try something new. Put something new in your basket, and it might just change the way you work. Go take a look, combatabrasives.com.
So one of our great listeners, Paul Jansen, who always submits always Smits. Paul Janssen, he helps drive the train, which really is something special. To the listeners who are constantly submitting stuff, I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. Paul Janssen says, part of the reason imposter syndrome plagues me and probably others is because we expect our work to be judged by other makers, not our customers. Mm. I'm worried about a knife maker. A knife maker will call out the flaws that the end user probably would never notice. It's a good point. Mm.
Yeah. Now, I think if you look at anybody's sort of social feed, any particularly knife makers, they're probably following a hell of a lot of other knife makers. And I always make this comparison of plumbers. I'm pretty sure plumbers won't be looking at other plumbers' work. But it's something that knife makers particularly, I mean, the 6 years we've been doing this, we get various forms of this question a lot. And I think when it comes to you know, looking at other people's work and your own worth, it can be easy to get sucked into that, just looking through your feet going, well, that's better than mine, that's better than mine, that's better than mine. And, you know, your own personal worth could feel less. But yeah, it's a weird one how, as let's call us creative makers, how we all probably do that. We follow others, whether it's for inspiration or whatever it may be. But the fact that we can do it knowing that it's just going to suck our own worth slightly. It's a bit of a strange one.
You don't think that plumbers are looking at each other's pipes? You don't think they don't
on OnlyFans?
They don't want to see how they lay that pipe. Those plumbers are totally looking at other people's work. Electricians are always looking at other people's work. Getting judged is like in a field is like that's normal shit. That's totally normal shit. Like welders, there's fucking, you know, you're right. I wanted to say something horrible. These morons are like, you call those dimes? I don't call those dimes. And you didn't have your, it's like you put a weld on Instagram and see how many flies come out. It's like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's hard out there. I remember there was a couple knife makers out there who were like, I could tell they were like very salty about other people, and they would, if you just did like I said a couple weeks ago, if you just did a belt finish and you only went to 60 grit, they called it look at him 60 grit and quit. You know, it's like, you know, there are people who are, you know, probably jealous most likely, or just aggravated.
Yeah
What do you think, Bracco?
Yeah, I mean, I think I become the most self-conscious about my work when other makers are looking at it, for sure. Especially if they're friends or people I respect, because, you know, we see each other's work online, but we rarely see each other in person, or to show each other's work in person, and so yeah, I definitely feel that kind of anxiety when I hand a piece of my work to somebody else to have a look at.
A couple of years ago, Josh Prince ordered one of my knives, and I was like shitting bricks that of what was going to happen. And he was into it; he liked it. He really liked it, and we had a good conversation. And I was really like, I was fucking nervous. I was nervous. Making knives for other knife makers is pretty terrifying. Because they know all the things. You know, most customers don't know a lot of the. They don't really know a lot about anything. Some of them. And so they won't pick up on things that a knife maker will pick up on.
I think sometimes we forget that generally we want other people to succeed, right, not to see them fail. But when the thought of somebody else holding your work who knows what they're doing, in your mind you're thinking, they're just looking for the flaws. They're just looking for the flaws. Where, yeah, it is just really, really difficult in this age where everything is on socials and it's, yeah, it all plays into this, you know, syndrome.
Oh, sure. Syndrome.
Yeah. 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 Of, imposter syndrome. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Small town smithing says, man, the talk about time as a commodity really resonates. Last week, Recco and I were saying that, you know, you spend money and everything like that, but your time, you just lose it. And it's like, we don't realize how little time we have. I'm pushing to get full-time knife making by next year. It's a dream for sure. I'm lucky to be able to apprentice with some amazing craftsmen in the field. Realizing the sand is running out on the timer is a great motivator. that's the number one for me. It's like, you know, how much more time can we do this, and how can we do it as safely and as healthily and as comfortably as we can?
Yeah, I talk about him quite often on the show, or I have done in the past, David Hyatt, who runs, funny enough, a jeans company, but he also puts on these events as well. And he has this phrase about talking about the time bank of, you know, you can go to the bank and withdraw cash, and you can put more cash in, you can refill it back up and the rest of it. But with time, you can't. And it's going to come to a point where you get there and there's literally no time left, you know, and there's nothing you can do to change that. So, yeah, and I think particularly now at our age, collectively, the three of us, we're all probably at that stage where we're thinking, you know, we're thinking about the future more than as if we were in our 20s, where, you know, you got plenty of time to do what you want to be doing. That, you know, that changes almost overnight, I think, when you get to sort of 35, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I'm all of a sudden realizing, like, all that old age and shit that I was thinking about when I was younger, I'm all of a sudden, I'm fucking here. Right. And so... So now I am thinking, yeah, definitely thinking about time and what time might be left and what to do with that. Well, you got it.
I've definitely, in the past 10 years, I've been really trying to hold back the aging process by like really cutting back on a lot of things that were not beneficial to my future. And that's the one thing that a friend of mine was telling me. It was my nutritionist friend, Tyler. I was on the phone with him, Tyler Minton. He's an awesome guy. And I think he was saying that what discipline is discipline is like a gift to your future self. Because you're, you know, when you're trying to be healthy and try to be disciplined, you're, it's like a love note to your future. So I mean, exercise and eating right and cutting a lot of bullshit out, like drinking coffee. I had one cup of coffee a day and pretty much red meat is out and, you know, booze is out. And I'm just trying to like get a lot of sleep and exercise and try to like eke these last, you know, usable years really of heavy work. I don't have much time and I'm going to try to slow it down as possible. But, you know, when I look down, I see my feet first, then my dick, then my penis. No, my dick and then my stomach. I don't have two dicks. I don't have two dicks. My feet stick out first.
Title,
then the penis,
the man with two dicks.
Then the penis. Feet first, then the penis, and then the stomach. So I'm sure that's the key. That's the golden rule. That when you look down, what sticks out the farthest? You want your stomach to stick out the least. Yeah, it'd be nice if your dick stuck out the farthest, but that ain't happening anytime soon. You know what I mean? So
depends on the time of year.
Yeah, baby, or when you get out of the pool, right? Okay. This is from Legacy Blades. Legacy Blade says, self-sabotaging feedback. I think Craig had said he feels like he only has an hour or two to spend in the shop. He feels like it's pointless because he won't get enough done. That's been a huge thing I've been trying to work on at nights and weekends as a maker. I think one of the keys is changing my head where an acceptable stopping point for a part of a process is. Example, in the past, if I feel like I don't have enough time to do an entire handle, I don't even want to start. Changing the mindset, though, I say, okay, I've had enough of this. Let's get on with the profile shaping, and then I'll sculpt the rest of it the next free block of time. It's made me a lot more efficient in the last several months, and I'm feeling less stress about trying to block off 2 to 3 hours just to work within the blocks of time that I have. Magna Carta. Here's the Magna Carta summarized. The mindset continues to be a key in all aspects of life. Thanks for broaching a heavy topic, Jared. So
nice.
That's tough, man. It's tough getting in and out there and trying to figure out a way to deal with all this stuff. Last on this self-sabotage is Spruce Hill Studios. On the topic of self-sabotage, demand avoidance. I don't know what this is a thing. Demand avoidance. That's an expression. Demand avoidance.
Never heard it.
Pathological demand avoidance is something we're learning about in our family as we go down the neurodivergence path of discovery. It's defined as not being able to do certain things at certain times, either for yourself or for others. It's and the pathological version means you avoid many everyday demands simply because they are demands. I know a lot of us makers, including myself, have a harder time following through on a commission work versus something that they're not on the hook for. These are terms I wasn't aware of until I started learning about neurodivergence in our house, and I thought some familiarity around this topic might be helpful to the community. So basically what he's saying is if you have this psychological block when you have to do something, like you got money for a commission and all of a sudden the fun of it is gone because you're committed to this versus you just want to fuck around and make something you want to make.
Mm.
So
yeah, I mean that's me all over, and not just in knife making, in anything, whether there's a piece of admin I need to do for the house, it's like, oh man, it's the last thing I want to be doing when I could be doing this, which sounds a lot more fun. I'll do this instead, you know. Yeah, that just does describe me, and a lot of it then comes down to guilt. This whole thing of not starting. Okay, I've got an hour. I could do something in an hour. But then you think, oh, there's nothing I can do in an hour. I won't. But then you just feel guilty for 50 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, right. And then you hear Jeff or Brian House talking about getting up at 3 a.m. and having their one coffee and working for 15 hours and taking over the world. You just think, oh, Jesus Christ. And, you just think, oh, man, I'm a shit. And then it happens again the next day and the next day. Before you know it, you're 3 months in and this is just a cycle that you're in. But that just describes me completely. Completely. If there's something that could be slightly more fun to do, I'll rationalize it in my head and think, okay, this is far more important now, but it clearly isn't, you know. But I'm very good at rationalizing ridiculous into being important.
No. I don't want to make it seem like I'm some sort of like special situation. I grew up in a situation where I had one parent who was incredibly disciplined and very, very fruitful in the things that they did. And I had one that was not. And the problem was I saw someone who I loved and cared for have no motivation at all and expected things just to work out okay. Hmm. And then now we're in a situation where they're not. And it's like I've seen what being not, you know, disciplined and motivated does. And I cannot have it. Like I cannot, because I've seen the end. I've seen what happens. I've seen the fact that the you know, what is it? The story, the happy ever after. It doesn't fucking happen unless you do it.
Mm.
It's terrifying, frankly.
Yeah. And this whole discipline and motivation, I wouldn't say I don't have it, but it's always directed in the wrong way.
Right.
So if I'm into something, especially something new, I'm the most motivated, you know, that anybody I know is the most important thing in the world. And that could be something so, so ridiculous that really doesn't matter. But yeah, that is all I'll think about for the next 48 hours, you know? It's a weird one. It is a real weird one. I'm slowly starting to sort of learn what all that is about. And yeah, I wouldn't say it's a battle, but it's something that I'm completely aware of. And at the time, you don't see it. But maybe a few days later, you'd go, Jesus, I should have been doing that and I didn't do it. I made this other thing far more important when it wasn't.
The other thing is like we're living in a time where there's more opportunities for personal growth than ever there ever was. And like upward mobility, opportunities for upward mobility than there ever was. And we also don't have this long length of training people to become entrepreneurs or work for themselves or small businesses. And people are flailing in the beginning because they don't have any kind of like education on how to do it correctly, you know? And the other thing is I grew up, my father had his own business. Both my sisters had their own businesses and they had small businesses and they struggled with employees and they struggled with taxes and they struggled with business and the times were good, times were bad. So I saw what it's like to be a small business person and I was kind of used to, and now I find myself in these situations where I'm like, I remember talking to my sister and she was kind of going through the same thing. So it's like I was comfortable with what the expectations were in regards to small business is hard. What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I definitely struggle with that. I mean, this knife that I'm struggling with right now, I started it like 2 years ago, right? And I kept delaying it and putting it off and doing shit like what Craig was saying, like, you know, kind of avoiding what I should be doing when it's just sitting there, like literally right in front of my face. And I think part of that comes from this leveling of anxiety that I experience, especially around something that is going to somebody that I perceive is very important, and I don't want to mess it up. And that desire to not mess it up feeds that anxiety and slows me down and pulls me back from being productive. And it happens, honestly, quite a bit lately, and I don't enjoy it. I'm really struggling with it. And another book that I've read, and I need to reread, actually, it was a really great one. It was written by Mel Robbins. It's called The 5-Second Rule. And basically, it comes down to if she's got something she wants to do, like from the point she thinks about it, she starts counting down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off, and then she fucking goes and does it. And it's, but it is challenging because then you have to discipline yourself just to start. And it's called initiation action. And then she goes throughout the book, she kind of tells all these different examples and some of the science behind all this stuff like that, to help kind of really send the message home. But really, the struggle is initiation action. And I find when I'm feeling anxious about something, or I just am like fucking death scrolling through Instagram, and I definitely have a lot more important things to fucking do, I don't sit down.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I get up, I grab whatever I'm supposed to be doing, and the whole time I feel like this tension in my body. And I'm walking to the grinder and I'm putting the belt on and all this shit, I'm just feeling anxious. And then I start doing it, and after like a minute, I'm now all of a sudden, and sometimes it takes longer, maybe it's 5 minutes, I'm just like, now I'm back into work mode, and I don't have to sit back in my chair at my workbench and continue to death spiral, basically downward spiral, if, as Jeff might say, but just like this downward spiraling of ruminating and overthinking, really. Like, we are the best at sabotaging ourselves, which is what this whole conversation is about, because of these fucking stories and these things we tell ourselves. And we need to learn how to interrupt that and tell ourselves a new fucking story and then move forward. And that's kind of like, that's a big part of where I'm at right now and things I've been struggling with. I think it's, you know, parts of it definitely have to do with my easy distractibility of ADHD and fucking struggling with depression and shit like that too. And it all kind of compounds and builds on each other. And so I'm trying to learn these new kind of approaches or these various approaches to have not just one, but kind of a toolbox to choose from. If like I try one and I didn't do it. Try another one. Okay, that one worked that time. But then I might have to go through like 4 or 5 different things before I figure out what the fuck, you know, which one's going to work this time. But I think the key is having those tools to help support you in the process of moving forward.
You were saying, Craig?
Oh, I was just going to say, shit, we're turning into a real podcast here.
Don't fucking forget about it. Number one, bitches. Number one. But
sorry, Jeff, go on.
I was going to tell you, it's interesting that you were talking about that, because when my father died, I was like bereft because there was so many, you know, all these different emotions, but also like there wasn't fixing problems that I was hoping would be fixed by the time he was done. Mm. And I had real problems with his wife, who ultimately was a really horrible, horrible person that I knew. And even talking about him, I started stuttering, by the way. I had a terrible stutter when I was a kid, and he used to make fun of my stutter. And like, oh, wow. He's haunting me from the fucking grave. He made me fucking stutter back there. I fucking saw you, Ben. Don't worry about that. But I ended up going to a shrink for a while, a therapist. And the therapist said, well, it sounds like you're having these very standard conversations with this particular person, his wife. He's like, and you say this, and then that makes them say this, and then that makes you say this. And he said to me, don't go by the script. The biggest problem that people have is they have this script on how they behave. Don't follow the fucking script. Change the script. Don't follow the script. This is what happens every single time. I say this, then you say this. This makes me feel that way, then it makes her feel that way, and then they go back and forth. Break up the fucking script. It's like on Seinfeld, where George Costanza is like, I'm miserable, I suck, I live at home, I don't have a job. And they say, well, why don't you do the opposite of what you do? Why don't you do the opposite of all your decision making? And he's like, okay, I'll do the opposite. And so there's this beautiful woman. You say, hey, look, George, there's this woman staring at you. Maybe you should go up to say something. And he goes, what are we going to do? I'm going to go up to her and say hello. He says, yeah, do the opposite of what you normally do. So he goes up to her and he says, hi, my name's George. I'm unemployed. I live with my parents. How are you? And then she just looks at him. She goes, hi. And it's just this hilarious moment of like, he did the exact opposite and everything worked out.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's almost like there is something to be said about, you know, try to change the script.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Absolutely.
No, all good stuff. All good stuff. Right. I'm going to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. They are the one-stop shop for knife makers with steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Anything we mention on the show, basically Lawrence gets it in stock. Go take a look, maritimeknifesupply.com. They've got a deal on where you buy 10 belts, rather, and you get 10% off. But yeah, always good stuff in stock. Go take a look at Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram as well, where Lawrence posts when they get new stuff in. But yeah, maritimeknifesupply.com. Go take a look.
They just got some Hitachi white in, I just saw.
Oh.
Which is kind of like a super clean, super high carbon, or I guess they're called ultra high carbon steels. It's manufactured in Japan and just makes for really great knives, especially culinary knives.
I'm looking forward to answering some of the questions, but I must address something right now. Craig Lockwood, when he names podcasts, he puts them up right at the top of our show notes. And this is the potential name for this week's episode. You don't know. We don't know. We could change. He could change his mind. This episode is called The Man with Two Dicks, But No Motivation. We're having this real serious conversation, sensitive, serious, you know, vulnerable, and all of a sudden, all he gets out of it is the man with two dicks with no motivation. You're hilarious, dude. You are fucking hilarious.
I know. Come Monday morning when I come to upload this, I'd forget a title and I need to skim through bits.
Yeah.
We're done. We're set now. We're set.
That is actually, you know what? That is a goddamn genius title, by the way. The idea that he's got two dicks and no motivation is hilarious. Oh, my God. He got two dicks and no hands. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, guys, if you want to ask us some questions for the show, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where you can interact with the show, send us whatever you want, your red flags, your listener feedback. But this is the part of the show where we answer some of your questions. Mareko, you want to hit this first one?
Yeah, this first one is from Sean Wilson. Question. Tips on when forging an integral, how to get a square shoulder to fit a handle to. If I don't forge in the bolster completely square, which I'd rather not do, so less grinding when rounding out, it seems impossible to get the Kamimura integral file guide to the Kamimura integral file guide to fit on square. I see. So square on the shoulders.
The tang. I think he's trying to square up the bolster. So
yeah. So on either side of the bolster, not the bottom. When I first saw that, I was reading it as the bottom of the bolster. But he's talking about the on either side of the bolster when it's still in the rough form, in the block form. And honestly, like there aren't a lot of good tricks. You just kind of, for a long time, what I did was just eyeball. I would grind one flat, and then I would grind the other shoulder to parallel, basically to match that as best as I could. But there's only so much you can do. And for a long time, I still even sometimes have to throw in like a little leather gasket or something like that. To help suck up any extra wiggle room there might be in there from the shoulder being a little bit off or a little bit wider at the front rather than at the back or vice versa. So that's, unfortunately, there aren't really a lot of good solutions for that, though I have been trying to work on one. And so keep your eyes peeled for one in the future. Hopefully in not too distant future, but right now, yeah, the best you can do is kind of eyeball parallel on those shoulders and then clamp the file guide to it to square off the bottom of the bolster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I it's funny because the way I read it was about how you forge in the tang into your integral bolster. So it's an easy fit. I mean, that's sure. One of the things that I was thinking about in terms of, you know, knife makers wanting to forge integral bolsters, and then how do you forge in so you have less grinding to do?
Yeah,
you know, so the connection is much more kind of like easy connection.
Sure. Well, and I'm just thinking about in regards to forging. I don't know why, but the shoulders of my bolsters. Oh, that's why. I just realized why. Anyways, the shoulders of my bolsters always end up kind of bulbous and rounded. And that's from like driving the bolster material down and which upsets it and causes it to kind of bulk up and bulge out in a way. But I never go back in to flatten it. And if you have a good set of flat dies, that should be able to give you good parallels, at least between those two surfaces. And honestly, between whether you're using a press or a hammer, if you're using a press, if you're using a C-frame versus an H-frame, there's always still a little bit of, what's it called? But misalignment from the die faces not being perfectly parallel to each other. But it'll be better than the nothing that I've been doing. Right. And honestly, I should be going back in just to get that little bit of flat on that bolster. So it makes it that much easier to attach the file guides for flattening the bottom of the bolster. And that way, yeah, you in the forging, you've created something not only for the file guides later to attach to, but also actually kind of can help work as a visual guide for straightness and center, as you draw out and forge out the blade, as well as the tang of the knife.
And if you're using a forge or if you're using a press or a power hammer, kiss blocks are underrated.
Yeah, kiss blocks, you know, all day.
If it wasn't for kiss blocks, we'd have to make railings with these pickets. We had to have kiss blocks to make sure that when we were rounding the square bar into round, that the kiss blocks made sure that we were at the same exact size every single time.
Yeah.
So I would think that if you had a kiss block on that was exactly what you wanted, that would probably help you in terms of kind of evening things out.
For sure.
So there you go.
Cool. Okay.
Speaking of, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. DTM shenanigans. And this is probably a good one for you, Jeff. You've been talking about sandblasting recently. So gentlemen, a quick question in regards to a satin finish. I know people who reload shells use a vibratory tumbler to polish brass. Do you think the same or similar could be done to a knife if just sandblasting media was put into a tumbler? I already use one for stonewash finish, but this could save time and cut out the blast cabinet. First of all, did you get a blast cabinet in the end, Jeff?
I haven't had a chance, and I'm trying to like. This is also I would refer to this part of the year as a leaner area of the year, so I'm less likely to spend. And you know what? Stupidly enough, the oil in the oil tank ran out last week, and I had to buy 500 gallons of fucking oil.
Holy
and it was
Jesus.
Like well, not 500 gallons. I had to buy. 150 gallons of oil. I had to buy 150 gallons of oil. And it was right before it was about to turn 60 degrees out. And I was like, well, I can't have the chance of there being a freeze and then the pipes freeze. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm very like miserly in regards to the expenses. I want to keep things kind of cool. So no, I have not bought anything of note. Like a sandblaster, I haven't. But I would think that if you put sand in a tumbler, God forbid there's any moisture in there or like spill any water in there or something like that. And all of a sudden you're like, I got a cement mixer. I'm not 100% sure. It's a great idea. I'd never even thought about the small media like that for a stonewash finish. Putting a very, very small blasting media in there, sandblasting media in the tumbler. I'm not 100% sure. One of the things about the tumbler is... My tumbler will not take out, will not change the scratch pattern. You'll bump it a little, especially if it's like stainless steel or, you know, anything above, I would think 59 Rockwell, you're not going to be doing a lot of, manipulation of the scratch pattern unless you do an acid finish first. The whole point of that stonewash finish is you're darkening it with acid and then you put it in the stonewash and then the stonewash is revealing the parts of the blackened and taking some of the black part out and then you get this kind of mottled matte finish. I'm not sure that you're, unless you have some sort of fucking monster, I don't see how you would be able to change the scratch pattern with a tumbler. I may be wrong. Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know enough about it.
Hmm. Okay.
Good answer, right? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to take this time to tell everybody about Texas Fire Supply, texasfiresupply.com. They sell Indasa Rhino-Wet, which is the sandpaper of the superstars. It's what everybody uses. This is going to save you money and save you time. But as well as Rhino-Wet, they sell anything else you could possibly need. TexasFireSupply.com. And if you use Knife Talk 10, you're going to get 10% off your order. So fill up that basket with lots of Rhino-Wet, lots of other good stuff that they've got there at TexasFireSupply.com.
I just saw that they were down at Blade Show, Texas. Imagine that.
I mean,
I think they're only about an hour away from where it's being held in Fort Worth.
I mean, yeah. You ain't got no. I mean, if they ain't at the Blade Show, Texas, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, they ain't doing it right.
Man, that show looked like there's a good group of people there, though. Our buddy Alfredo was there.
That's right, Alfredo. Alfredo was there.
He gets around. Jeez,
he's a good dude. Funny guy. He did a video with I think a Third Hill Customs,
mm-hmm.
Third Hill Customs, and they did how do you speak in English to Italian? It was very, very funny. Very, very funny. This next question comes from our friend Colorado Bruce. Good old Colorado Bruce. Colorado Bruce says, "Hey man, can I ask you a question? Do you think your podcast has influenced the knife community? There's this newer company in Portland, Oregon, and they produce culinary knives, drop forged American steel, hand finished and coffee etched. Heck, they're probably even using Mareko's coffee etch process. I say some of this in jest, but I do wonder if this company would have been possible without a resurgence in the popularity or all awareness for the likes of your show and perhaps Forge and Fire. Any thoughts? Thanks for what you do, Colorado Bruce. Good old Colorado Bruce. Mareko, you didn't invent the coffee etch, did you?
I did not invent it, but I'm happy to rehash the story. It's very short. The first time I heard about the coffee etch was when I first started Malmasy Fire Arts, and I was working out of Seattle. And I met Adam DeRosiers, and we were talking about Damascus finishing and all this kind of stuff. And he's mentioned that he has maker friends in Europe who use instant coffee. And I was like, oh, really? And I was so he was talking about what kind of situations they would use it in and all that kind of stuff. He didn't have like a mixture ratio, a time, temperature, any of that kind of stuff. And, I thought about it in that conversation, then kind of forgot about it and never pursued it or hadn't pursued it. And then it was about, a year later that I started messing with it. And that's when I kind of, at that point, had come up with a standard process. It was about a year later that I started messing with it. And then it was another year after that that I started talking about it. And then it was after that, I believe, what's Caleb's last name? I can't remember Caleb's last name. But anyways, I had this conversation with this kid named Caleb, and he ended up doing a write-up of our conversation. Or transcribed a video I made on Instagram back in like 2016, 2017, something like that. And from there, people just have started using the coffee etch with honestly a lot of mixed results. And it is tricky sometimes to get consistent results, but I've finally gotten to a place where I'm getting very good, consistent results. But it's taken fucking like 8 years to dial it in. So, or I guess 7 years to get it dialed in. But that's kind of how coffee etching really started to become a thing in the U.S. as far as I understand. Because otherwise, like you look on forums, you look on, like nobody was talking about it. It wasn't a thing. There could have been other people doing it. None that I'm aware of. Other than, like I said, the reference to the makers in the UK, or not the UK, but in Europe. And so that's where that all kind of, that's my part in all of the coffee etch thing stuff.
So do you think that this podcast has influenced companies? Do we have that type of juice?
For sure.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think we got that kind of juice?
All day.
All day. Yeah. Fucking love it.
It's a bold move.
That's a fucking two dick, no motivation move. Two dicks and no motivation, bitch. That's the name of the next fucking knife company.
No, I know this guy that owns this Steelport knife company, or he's part owner in it. And he owns the Portland Knife House, which is a culinary kitchen knife store in Portland. And then he also has the Phoenix Knife House, which is the same thing, just down in Phoenix, Arizona. His name's Eitan. He's a good dude. Actually, when I did a sharpening, kind of a quote-unquote sharpening competition, kind of put together by Triple B about a year ago now. But we did it at the Steelport facility, at their shop where they do their knife making. But yeah, I think it's cool. You know, whatever you got to do to get a good look on your knife. And honestly, coffee is right. Like it's food safe.
That's for sure.
And it's a good look.
All right.
Cool.
Well,
cool.
You were right. Colorado Bruce was right.
One thing I would say in regard to influence of this show, we have spawned a lot of podcasts, I think. A lot of knife making and steelworking podcasts from this show. But whether we've influenced the industry as such, who knows? Who knows? But with that, I think we should do a trio of ads, get them out the way. I'm going to start with one. I think Jeff should tell us about working with his award award-winning knife using Dharma steel. And then Mareka will tell us all about his grinder. But I'm going to start with KnifePrint, knifeprint.com. If you've ever wanted to design a knife on a screen on a computer, which makes it super easy to recall that design, make edits, make templates, all that kind of thing, you want to be using knifeprint.com. Don't go downloading software you need to pay for licensing and all that kind of thing. It's a waste of time. Knifeprint.com is all in the browser. Super, super simple. If you've never done it before, they've got a great education center there. They'll talk you through how to do it. Print to paper, so you get your template. But you can also print to steel. So you pick the stock, you pick the thickness, and they'll either water jet cut it or laser jet cut it, and they'll just ship it to you. So great for short runs and that kind of thing. KnifePrint.com. You'd never regret it.
Speaking of never regretting something, I never regret using Damasteel. Go to damasteel.se and put in the promo code KnifeTalk10 for all the best pattern welded stainless steels you can imagine. I'm telling you, this stuff is dynamite, and the guys and gals over at Damasteel are knowing what to do and making it happen for you. Go to damasteel.se. Once again, Knife Talk 10 for the promo code. Go check them out on Instagram. Knife Talk Damasteel AB on Instagram, and we're very fortunate to be involved with them. So that's that.
Yeah. And as I was talking about before, even though I fucked up my knife, I will say that my broadback grinder helped me get there in a good way.
Oh, good. You're about to say.
Is this the worst average ever?
Broadback fucked that knife right up.
No, I thought you were gonna say nothing. Broadback was killing it. It was me that fucked it up. But I just I'm so thankful for that machine. It is it comes in clutch often. Actually, I was also sharpening knives this week, and one of the processes I do is offering to buff sharpen some of the different knives, especially like serrated knives, and I can't do that without the broadback. And so it's great that the broadback has so many different tool arms. They're multiple machines in one. They're great guys. You know, Vince and Ryan are great guys who have put together this company to help make a great grinding tool for makers, and it was designed and made by these guys who are makers as well. And it's also a great machine for woodworking and any other kind of metal fabrication, steel fabrication you got to do. So if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, and oh, guys, I need your help. Is it
Knife Talk 10,
Knife
baby?
Talk 10. Yeah, there you go. Put that in. Make sure you put that in at checkout, no matter what you're getting. If you're getting the packages or you're just getting a single tool arm, make sure you throw in that Knife Talk 10 to save yourself a little cashola. And yeah, that's it. Broadbeck, they're kicking ass.
Speaking of saving ass, we've got to do some feedback because the three of us are all here, and it's time sensitive feedback.
Okay.
Does that sound okay by you?
Let's do it, yeah.
All right, guys. Guys, if you once again, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Don't send it to Fader Knives. Don't send it to Momasi Fire Arts. Don't send it to Chop Knives. Knife Talk Podcast. This is listener feedback. The first one comes from our friend Wyoming Cody, and he says, I just bought a broadback grinder and an Even Heat KB. Can't wait to start throwing sparks. Thanks for the inspiration, guys. Wyoming Cody, you're doing it right. Now, this is where we get into, you know, look, we had serious talk before, and now it's going downhill. Ben Camone. One of the, you know, top tier. He says, when I typed in poop knife was already the fourth recommendation from the top on Google, which tells me that many people recently looked that shit up. I blame Knife Talk Podcast for that. Signed, Chuck LaStarfish. I think it's chocolate starfish. I don't know what he's going for. It's a butthole joke. But yeah, poop knife was a big topic of conversation last week. Maybe people looked up a poop knife. But Rainy Day Forge wrote, when I was 13, I was on a cross Canada road trip. My 15 female year old cousin joined us on the trip. My parents went out and left us at a hotel, and I took a dump that clogged the toilet. There was no plunger, and I wanted to call the front desk. My cousin was worried that we would get in trouble and didn't want to bother. She found plastic cutlery in our room and proceeded to chop up our poop. I was mortified. She was a farm girl.
Oh,
well,
geez.
Rainy day. I mean, you know.
Blending it. Oh,
Rainy, I got to talk to you for something. I got to tell you. When I tell you to send us these stories, you can... No one's going to fact check you. We don't have to. You can fucking, you could say.
A friend of mine was on a road trip.
I heard this story about this guy who fucked up a toilet. You didn't have to say you did it. And you don't have to blame your damn cousin for fucking fixing it. You could have
plastic made it.
We don't even care. We don't even care about the truth. You think we're going to call someone up? And let me find your now, probably, hopefully, I'm not calling your 15-year-old cousin up about it. She's got to be in her, you know, whatever, 40s. But it's like, make the fucking story up. Don't incriminate yourself like that. Goddamn. I can see this poor cousin with a fucking plastic knife and fork, you know, hunched over the toilet. Maybe you'll go down the next flush. Wow. And what are you doing, Rainy Day? Why are you letting her do that? What's the fuck is the matter with you?
He's in the corner gagging. He's driving.
I mean, and then let's just call back for a second here. Why did you tell her that you clogged the toilet? What? How did this whole thing happen? You've told it this weird way. You should have been like, I just couldn't say anything. But you had to tell her, and then she says, oh, I have a great idea. There's a fucking fork and knife in the drawer. We'll use that.
Yeah. 2-inch bit of plastic. Yeah.
This is the stupidest story of all time. This is unbelievable. Rainy, I'm kidding. It's not the stupidest. It ain't great. But it's fucking... I mean, the whole thing... We have to talk later about it, but I mean, that's fine by me. Nick Alpin says, top 5 knife talk moments was when Jeff was being vulnerable and Craig shit his pants just to get out of the conversation. Jeff expertly handled the following moments until Craig's return. That is funny. That is funny.
Getting pretty deep, actually, and I was thinking, I can't go now because it's wrong if I go now. The timing's wrong.
It was so right, though.
Got to
it
the point,
so right.
Yeah.
This sums it up. Nick was 100% right. I was being vulnerable. You shit your pants just to get out of the conversation. The latest episode was fire with the real talk. Lots of love to everyone with shitting pants, with shitty parents who taught us how not to be. That's funny. Devil's Hollow Forge says, what's up, fellas? Quick feedback on getting photos. I started using an app called Photo Room. We were talking about getting photos. It has a little bit of a learning curve, but has definitely upped my photo quality. I'm sure a lot of guys like me are out there using their phone. Hope this helps. This one, for the Super Bowl, we did predictions, and our friend Chris Holton was the closest. He was really close to the predictions. He just wrote, I was wondering why it's been raining poon for the last couple of days. And then I listened to the latest episode of Knife Talk when I heard I was the Knife Talk Super Bowl prediction champion. It all makes sense now. Thanks, guys, for keeping up the good work.
Raining poon.
You know what raining poon is, Craig?
I'm assuming it's Poonani is the
Poonani, whatever it is. I was raining poon. Yeah, that's right. Everybody listen. All that poons listen to this podcast. This is interesting. You know, we were a number of episodes in Mareka. We never got to you, but this is a perfect get you in this. Brigham Kendall was asking about the coffee etch, and he was finding that this is what he said. Any tricks on getting oxides from coming off of etch blades? I've watched it multiple times with soap and water, and I wax it, and still the black comes off. Now, we had said, you weren't here, and Craig and I were saying that when you're using coffee etch, I was saying I'm not sure it's actually the oxides at all, and I didn't know. And what Eric Markman wrote was coffee etch is manganese oxide.
Okay.
Do you know anything about that?
I don't know about the chemistry of the coffee etch.
But is it, would it be that, is that etch kind of closer to being a stain, or is it like, because it doesn't scrub off like an oxide does after you pull steel from ferric.
Yeah. No, I think it's a combination of the kind of acids that are in the coffee, as well as them being dark and the way it opens up the surface and how it darkens it. I think it is still oxides. It's just a more durable the way that it is on the surface of the blade for whatever reason.
Well, we have a little bit more feedback, or we could do whatever you want. If we want to do a little fool around afterwards, your call.
Can we do just the next two questions just quickly?
Yeah, let's do it.
I think they're quite interesting. So the first one is Uncle Sam Metalworks brings his question. He's been watching documentaries about Japanese sword making and the tapping of the anvil for the striker. And he said, what is that telling the striker? Is it something to do with the strength of the hit or the speed, for example? You know, when you see him just, you know, tapping right. The anvil there. But what are they doing? What's the purpose?
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, I think it's just the cadence. I think, I don't know how you would, I mean, they might also be dictating the strength of the hit. But I think mostly it's the master kind of telling the striker, I want you to hit again and again and again. And then if they need gentler hits, they usually stop or don't continue the pinging, at least from what I've seen. And then they'll do a couple light hits to do some corrective forging or something like that. And then they put it back in the fire. But yeah, I mean, it could be both. It could be just the cadence. I don't know.
In my experience, it's been... So you have a striker and you have the guy with the, you know, one guy with a big sledgehammer and one guy with a hammer, the guy who's leading it. And Uri Hoffe used to do this a lot with his best student, Zivik Gottlieb. And it was communication. So they wouldn't just start hitting. The master would hit the anvil on the horn, and then that would signal the striker to hit the anvil on the horn. So it's like you're communicating. So hits the horn. Then he hits, and then they hit, and they alternate. And then there'll be a moment where, especially as the steel is cooling down, you know, maybe the master will say, I don't want any more hard hits because obviously you're not doing anything, and now I'll planish. So they'll hit or strike the anvil in a specific way, or like, you know, Hoffe used to just, you know, like, bring, almost like he would ring it. It would be like the way you skip stones off water. It would just be like he would just kind of graze it. It would make a specific, and that was their communication on when to for the striker to stop.
Okay.
So there's a lot of communication, and most strikers and people have, because you know you don't have a lot of time. There's not a lot of time in between heats. I know Cliff and John are super dialed in. Like, they've been forging together for so long, they know each other's everything. So they don't do that, the tapping and stuff like that, but they have, they're in tune in general. They know how they normally do it, although they'll say a little bit harder, a little bit. But the hammer thing is pretty cool because you can create this very quick pace and communication that means, all right, now you stop, now you start, now you stop. And it's like the dinging means that. But actually that reminds me, I'm actually going to drag this question over. I know we don't do a lot of blacksmithing questions, so I'm actually going to be having Pat Quinn, the director of the Center for Metal Arts, on Full Blast Podcast for a number of episodes, and we're going to be asking blacksmith questions there. So he's going to be answering very specific questions for you in regards to this, you, the listener, for the Center for Metal Arts and basic forging, blacksmithing, whatever you want. So if you want to go over there, you can get ready for that.
Cool. I just want to do this one last question because it's about a gadget that could make our life easier. And if it's anything to do with gadgets, I'm into it. But first of all, I want to address something. So Connor Travis has sent this in. We've had lots of questions about naming a company, you know, XYZ knife, whatever it may be. So Connor Travis, he didn't name his knife company Connor Knife Company or Travis Knife Company. He just called it Allen. Allen Knife Company.
That's, I think that's a mistake. I think I accidentally put, I think I fucked up.
Oh, well, that was my little bit gone. Thank you for that, Jeffrey.
I think because Allen Knives, you know what? You're right. No, you're right. You're 100% right. No, Allen Knives, he's Connor
Travis. Let's call my company Allen.
No, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. No, you're right. I'm wrong. You were right.
Thanks for diving on that one, Jeff. The timing was impeccable.
I fucked it up.
Right. First, I greatly appreciate what you gents do for the community. I'm new to knife making, and you guys have accelerated the learning curve for me immensely. Secondly, I'm always looking to minimize hand sanding, and it's the bane of my existence. I've stumbled across an ultrasonic polishing units, and I'm wondering if the juice is worth the squeeze on my wallet. I'm specifically looking at the UM1200 by Gesswine. However, I'd love to hear if you had any experience with something like this. So no ultrasonic polishing units to avoid hand sanding. Never heard of such a thing. Have you guys heard of them, used them, or anything like that at all?
I think that was Jeff's nickname in college, wasn't it?
What,
the ultrasonic polishing unit?
Yeah, well, you got two dicks, no motivation. You need all the tricks and help you can get, you know? Ooh, that's right.
I've just Googled it, and it looks like, well, it looks like a Dremel, sadly.
Can you imagine?
It's just a Dremel. It's a $1,500 Dremel.
Can you imagine? All of a sudden, you're just like, I have this great idea for this new tool, and then it turns out to be the fucking most hated tool on the universe. I'm going to finish this. I'm going to fix this whole knife up with the Dremel. Oh, God.
I was expecting some sort of tank, and it'd be like some sort of chemical and ultrasonic, I don't know. Yeah. But looking at it just looks like a Dremel to me.
Oh, so God. Like,
so don't buy a $1,500 Dremel, please. Jeez.
Can you just imagine? Can you imagine? I speaking of Dremel, nobody beats the brakes off Dremel like Jimmy DiResta. I don't know if you ever
really
seen some of his late night stories about how much he hates Dremel, and he tags them, and he says the most horrendous things you've ever heard. It's hilarious. He'll say, look, he'll open a drawer and say, look at this drawer full of this garbage company. I've been using this garbage company. They changed the batteries don't fit. Nothing has worked. He will tear this fucking company up. He goes, and the biggest problem is I'm stuck with them because all these companies, you can't get anything that you need. This is the closest thing you need, and I'm stuck with this garbage company. It's hilarious. Like, once every 6 months, he will beat the brakes off of Dremel on his stories. I always fucking get such a laugh out of it.
Brilliant.
So
brilliant.
I'm looking at it too, and while the handle does look like a rotary tool, if you look at the tools, the little shaft, they're like flat, and so
they're flat. Yes, it goes, blade. Yeah,
it does the back and forth rather than rotating around. But god damn, that $1,600—that's a hell of a price point to pay for. I don't know if that's the move.
Hand sanding sucks, but it's like,
it does suck.
The problem is like, we're all trying to reinvent the wheel on how to make it easier. People are putting it on jigsaws, and they're trying to, come up with, getting some of these like dildo machines and fuck machines. They're trying to do all sorts of, you know what I'm talking about? They're all these fucking strokers that are trying to figure this thing out. And it's always like, bro, don't go to the fucking sex store to get your fucking satin finish squared away. Just gotta figure something else out besides all this, humping.
But I was honestly imagining some sort of tank with a liquid in and something happening, but no, it's nothing like that. Yeah, as Mareko said, they looks very much like a Dremel, but they're like flat, almost like chisel like blades. I'd imagine you use those flat faces on your blade. But I think you could easily fuck up as well.
I
can't see how that would work so well, to be honest with you.
I'm sure it's also a J-hook machine, you know. That's the thing about all these hand-sanding fuck machines. They're all like, it's really... They're really just a J-hook machine, because there's no finishing things. All you're doing is fucking J-hook by your goddamn, an inch by your goddamn plunge line.
I think you got a new title there, Craig.
I was contemplating, but I quite like the two dicks with no motivation.
I like the two dicks with no motivation too. Yeah, you can't change. I mean, you can't change it to the, you know, the fuck machine is the J hook machine. You can't do that. That's over. That's out of control.
With that, shall we call it a day?
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Thank you all for listening, and we shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
I was watching Curb Your Enthusiasm is unbelievable. This is the last season, and one of the great characters, who this actor Richard Lewis, who's on Curb Your Enthusiasm all the time, just died. It's terrible. Awesome, funny actor. The funny thing is Curb Your Enthusiasm will have a very serious topic, and then they'll immediately go into testicle humor, like gross testicle humor. And I was saying to my wife, I was just like, this is the funny part about this. You're having these real life things and all of this. I said, this is just like Knife Talk. We'll talk about really serious stuff, and then we'll just completely like nosedive into something absurd. Absurd. I love it.
It's all good. It's all good. Right. Okay. What your plan for the week, you two? Anything special?
No.
I'm trying to, we're trying to like catch up on sleep. I got one more Knicks game to go to next week, and I think I'm going to cut it. I think that's it, because unless they go to the playoffs and I get free tickets, I don't get any sleep the next day. I get home by midnight and I'm up the next morning before 4:30, and I'm just like a kind of a wreck. But I got a Knicks game on Tuesday, and then that's the only thing we got going on. And I got at the Center for Mental Arts as well, I have classes available for the Friction Folder class. They're still in April. We still have some slots available. So if you go to centerformentalarts.org, get involved with that Friction Folder, make yourself a pocket knife, and we'll tell some jokes.
There we go. There we go. Well, I suppose that's it then. Thank you all for listening.
Wait a second. What about you? Yes. You gotta. Have you eaten anything wild while you're in the UK? Or?
Not really. We're in this. I say it's like a family sort of holiday resort thing, and it's all kid focused. So nothing good's going on here at all, really, regards to food. Although there's like a little, like a really traditional pub on site, and. They had a guy playing the guitar there last night, taking requests from like 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds. So he's doing like Disney songs and playing up and so on. And like before we knew it, it was like 9 p.m. and we're still out with the three kids. Like,
oh my God.
We'd had a few drinks and there's just kids everywhere. It was manic in there. And we're like, geez, maybe this is the future. We get to go out and have a few drinks. The kids are entertained. It's one of those very sort of family orientated resorts. So yeah, we leave here tomorrow morning early, drive straight to London. We got a hotel there while I go out to the gig, and then Saturday morning we do the drive back to France.
So, wow. Oh my
God. Yeah, it's gonna be a busy week. Yeah, well, a busy few days rather. Yeah.
Well, let's get you back, get you to sleep, because this is good luck with the show.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Wow. Right.
Thank you all for listening.
Did you say no drugs?
Yeah, no
at
drugs.
At my age, no believe drugs. Me, it's not happening.
No worries.
He's got that, you know, baby Bjorn. He got his kids on his, you know, he's got the kids on his back, and all these.
Yeah, the tumbler of coke. That's your thing in the pool hole. Right. Thank you all for listening. Speak to you soon. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.